We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
And welcome again to the News Quiz, which this week comes from Loughborough Town Hall as part of the Leicester Comedy Festival. We start with an advertisement in The Rush magazine, read by Brian Perkins.
Paris weekend, three-day Valentine break. Why not take this superb opportunity to spoil someone special? Single supplement, £28.
Thanks to Richard Steele of Guildford for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, John Sargent and Maureen Lipman. Opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Rebecca Front. John, why has Israel come under aerial attack?
Oh, well, this is quite easy. It's a change from Ehud Barak to Ariel Sharon. Now, if you've been a very faithful listener to this program, you'll know that when Ehud Barak took over as Prime Minister, I pointed out that as an undercover agent in the military, he had been known to wear a woman's dress. Now, think of Ariel Sharon now, in a little black number, and you'll get an idea of how important this change of government is in Israel.
Correct.
He does say that he's going to bring peace to the Middle East, Sharon, which I think is the same way that America brought peace to Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, you never know, actually, once he gets in. I mean, he apparently looked completely shell-shocked when he won. This is the clue that actually... Well, rather as Tony Blair did when he won.
It's the clue that he's going to use shells, is that
clue? No, it's the clue, I think, that he's going to be less aggressive than perhaps we all think he is.
Oh, give war a chance, I thought was the slogan.
Well, you know, we could argue the toss here, but actually I think the Palestinians have probably put Sharon in a way that's going to actually make things peaceful. That is my feeling. I don't know.
That's your analysis.
There's no joke in that.
Yes, hardline right-winger Ariel Sharon swept to victory in the Israeli general election. His win means there will have to be a more sensitive approach to international diplomacy in the Middle East now, though. Thank goodness we have George W. Bush in the White House. Maureen, whose straight answer left Haig feeling vague?
That's a good question, Simon.
It is.
Whose straight answer... Oh, yes, this will be Tony Blair, the Prime Minister, who... who actually wrong-footed the shiny-headed one, the Ally McBeal doll, who's on the other side. Yeah, he said to him something like, and when is there going to be a referendum? And Blair said, is it going to be within 2 years? And Blair said, yes. Put the ground from under his feet. Is that the right answer?
Mm. Now, why was that Mr. Haig? Why was he so pleased to hear this? Well, he was pleased to have got out of the Prime Minister, but why was he so pleased to know that Mr. Blair would win the next election?
they're gonna have a referendum and they're gonna lose it. So clearly something's afoot here, because they want to bring in the single currency, which I don't. I mean, frankly, since they've given up pounds, shillings, and pence, I mean, it's over for the pound. As far as I'm concerned, I don't really care one way or the other. But if they're gonna have a referendum on it, they will lose, because most people would rather keep the pound. So they're kind of stuffed, unless there's something we don't know about this referendum.
We could have a referendum about whether we have a referendum or not, couldn't we?
We certainly could. We certainly could, more on our team, because we're like that, and we work very closely together.
Is it referendums or referenda? You decide. But people, they'll lose it, so they can't hold it.
That's right. It's a
so they won't
point.
Hold it. Jeremy, they'll have to have a focus group, which will be the entire country. I suppose that's what they'll do. Maybe it'll just be a fight.
No, I think the point is here, you have an assessment, right? Then you have an early reassessment. And then you're told what an early reassessment means, and that means within 2 years. You see, it's once you're at Westminster, it's all so simple. We understand this. We understand perfectly. This is normal conversation.
Do you get outside Westminster?
No, I never. It's the first time I've been outside Westminster for years. It's frightening, isn't it?
The euro rallied strongly on world markets following the Prime Minister's announcement that a referendum could be held within 2 years of a general election. The euro is now worth a massive half an ounce of yak butter on the Iapetus-Mongolian exchange. 2 points to Maureen. Rebecca, why wasn't William having such a taxing time anymore?
Does this do with all those family tax credit things and all sort of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. 2 points.
You're in there, Becky.
I think I've pulled it. It's because I've got a cold, isn't it? The trouble is, you see, Simon, thank you for the 2 points, but what tends to happen is I look through the papers, I do my homework, and then I see anything to do with euro or pound or tax, and I kind of just glaze over. It's an O-level maths thing. I don't know what it is. It's a mental block. I can't do it. It's something, you know. So I don't know the full answer, is what I'm trying to say.
Is it a lady's problem, my dear?
What I'm working around to in a gradual way is that I know there were two tax stories this week, because you're going to make me suffer here. There were two tax stories. William Hague wants to cut tax because he knows that he'll get more votes that way. And actually, it doesn't matter because we've got the points.
We've got the points.
No, you've got lots of points.
Can't we win some points back by being really clever about it?
No, because it's Jeremy's turn.
No, let John...
I think it's a pretty unfair question to ask a woman in your stage of pregnancy, frankly. I mean,
I'm wearing Wellingtons, to be honest. Let the old ITN scab have a go. Go on.
No. I could go on about this, but I don't think I will.
He doesn't.
I don't think it's going to work with young people. Can you imagine young people saying, should we not go out, but let's talk about our savings? I mean, they don't say it, do they?
I bet William and Fionn do. He's still got the wrestling sessions with Seb Coe, though, hasn't he? That,
yes.
You know, keeps a man going, that, doesn't it?
Question referred to the Tory plans to reduce tax on anyone's savings if you earn less than £32,000 a year or something like that. Jeremy, listen to this. Shame, well, I can't break away from you, shame. Jeremy, news of the screws. Why was the governor hoping to play his get-out-of-jail-free card this week?
This will be a question about governors and screws and jails, I guess. Oh, I could be hired as a sidekick, couldn't I? In fact, no one's heard anything from Doris Stokes since she died, have they? Anyway, Mark will be quiet. Martin Nairy, who is the top bloke in the prisons department, threatened to resign because the state of our jails is so appalling, and he blamed the staff. Now, normally, I would be with the workers against the management. However, you have to bear in mind what route people have taken to become prison officers. These are people who are too violent for the army, too racist for the police, too charmless for the post office. And they become screws. Small wonder that our jails are violent hellholes. And this is where Jack Straw is housing refugees, to provide company for all the people who are fitted up by the police. At least they've got something to talk about, the fact they've not done anything wrong. It's the fact that our jails are hideous hellholes. 12 points.
I thought it was just a strange form of this new management theory that you just blame the people that are working for you. You say, I'm in charge of the prison service. They're awful, these prisons, you know. They're really awful. And you don't blame me, I'm just in charge. You know, it's not easy being in charge of these awful prisons. It's like Greg Dyke saying the BBC's hideously white. It's the same idea, you know. Blame the staff. I'm off soon if you don't sort yourselves out.
Prison service head Martin Nairy said he didn't anticipate any trouble finding a new job. As one door shuts, another opens. We start round two with a cutting from the Mail on Sunday.
Baroness Thatcher is to spend part of the year living in South Africa. The decision by the former Prime Minister to spend more time away from London was welcomed by friends.
Thanks to John Ratty for sending that. Maureen, who hopefully will have no cause for complaint about his evening out on Wednesday.
Next. Half.
Prince William.
Fine, I'm slowly getting there. The HRT is kicking in. Yeah, he went to the press complaints thing with Lord Wakeham. Anyway, he said it was brilliant, which is a word used by teenagers quite a lot to describe everything. And he was taken there by his father, the Prince of Wales, and by his father's friend, Camilla Parker Bowles, and all the press were there, and he was there, and it was extremely friendly, and he thanked them wholeheartedly for getting off his back. How am I doing?
You're doing brilliant. Yes,
she stood nowhere near them, though, did she? Camilla
no,
Parker Bowles.
30 yards.
She was miles. She was miles from them. She has to hang around behind the Volavons. You know, hoping to just maybe get a quick one later. I mean, you know. Just because she's a Catholic and she's the same age as him, she has to hide behind the rubber plant pretending that she's not noticed there, you know. Like the driver or something.
It was Prince William who, along with Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles, mingled with soap stars and newspaper editors at a party to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Press Complaints Commission. Yes, amongst the guests were stars of British soaps such as Liz Dawn, Jane Danson, and Kevin Kennedy, a veritable who's that of British television. The palace said it was very unfortunate that 500 guests were crammed into a tiny room with only one toilet, as the prince isn't used to finding himself 18th in line for the throne.
And Joanna Lumley, there's always Joanna Lumley, isn't there? And it always says, a very good friend of the Prince of Wales.
What do you think that means?
I've no idea, and I don't know why I brought it up.
Rebecca, listen to your piece of music. Green Onions by Booker T and the MGs. Rebecca, why was Tony Blair taking his pollen figure as seriously as his poll figure this week?
Taking his what, sorry?
Pollen figure. P-O-L-L-E-N.
So, Hague fever.
Is this GM crop?
It is.
Oh, thank you, yes. Apparently they're perfectly safe, aren't they, GM crops? And now they've, although they have extended the exclusion zone around them by 50 miles. But they're perfectly safe, and I think that's why they're going to plant more of them. I presume that's what it was about.
It is.
And there's another story this week about a genetic trial that's been going on to genetically enhance flowers so that petals will grow where leaves had hitherto grown. Why? I mean, why? Do something worthwhile with your life. But anyway, presumably the same bunch of scientists have been doing all this GM research, and it's perfectly safe, and it's only middle-class fools like me who'll go on buying organic foods and worrying about butterflies.
Trees are going to be very strange if all their leaves are petals, aren't they?
A bit flimsy.
It's going to make an awful mess of autumn, isn't it?
It'll smell nice, though.
Yeah, it'll be a potpourri.
It'll be like a
world.
Potpourri, won't it?
What, like the Vatican?
Potpourri, damn you and your potpourri.
No, they're actually, they're planting these crops just next to normal crops. And they say, no, it's all right, GM pollen just hangs about. Don't move. It's wind resistant. Bees can't touch it. All them videos you've seen with bees where they go in and shag the plant and come out all covered in lager and pollen and used prophylactics, all that's not true. Because the pollen in GM stuff just stays still and it's all right. That's the government's line.
The chief advisor to the project will be Mick Jagger, on the grounds he's the only man in Britain with sufficient experience at the widespread distribution of genetic seed.
It's not surprising that Mick Jagger is so fertile, because he just looks like a human scrotum, doesn't he?
And that's damn attractive for me.
He's just one big testicle with lips, isn't it?
I don't know where yours came
from. Mr. Jagger's lawyer has just called me on my mobile.
Maureen, who's rustled up a great new phone invention?
I don't know.
I know.
Rebecca knows. No, Rebecca knows it's too late.
No, Rebecca
knows. It's over for those two.
Well, we've got to get the score separated
ask
somehow.
Ask me the question again. I'm all
no, no. Rebecca's going to have a baby. Let her answer the question.
I'll have a mood swing.
Exactly. give her the question, please.
Disposable mobile phones, throwaway mobile phones, which apparently are just a piece of paper with a, what do you call those things, silicon chip thing. And it's, yeah, you can use them for £10 worth of phone calls, and you can program a few numbers into them, and then you make your phone calls, and then you chuck them away. And somebody came up with it, she said, because she was driving along somewhere and her mobile phone signal kept disappearing and reappearing, and she felt like chucking it out of the window. And she came up with this idea of disposable mobiles.
I want to throw away the people who use mobile phones. Have you ever, ever overheard an interesting mobile phone conversation? There's all this stuff about Paul and is he coming round and see you? And like and everything. Oh, it's just awful.
I have this vision of a sort of a beautiful park and a spring day and everybody in the park, whether they're in the shrubbery or the maze, they're all on mobile phones and they're all saying, I'm in the park! And there's just one bag lady who can't hear herself mutter for the noise. And they're all saying, it's so peaceful here. What? Peaceful, I say it's peaceful.
I still don't understand the paper thing.
I don't know the exact
scientific
details.
How can you have a
details?
Paper telephone? That's just a letter, isn't it?
So I'll give 1 point to Maureen for knowing the answer and 2 points for Rebecca for telling us what it was. Before we start the final round, here's an item spotted in the situation's vacant pages of The Guardian.
Girl Talk is the UK's leading magazine for girls between the ages of 7 and 12. We're looking for a writer to cover maternity leave.
Thanks to Sarah Kozak of Birmingham for that. John, your piece of music. Walk the Dinosaur by Was Not Was. John, who hopes their new exhibit has more than a whiff of success to it?
This is the Natural History Museum, and they're being extremely unfair to T-Rex, suggesting that dinosaurs like T-Rex smell horribly of putrid rotting flesh. Now, BO, as you know, and I'm a bit of a doctor really on the side, is to do with bad digestion. We've got to face this, we've got to understand this. Now, if you've got bad digestion, you can't behave like T-Rex did in Jurassic Park, where he ate everything, if you remember. He ate furniture, glass, steel, and all the rest of it. You can't do all that at one moment and then have bad breath the next. So all this stuff about they should really smell like carelessly cooked spinach was one idea, is just completely unfair. And I suspect that T-Rex, just like the rest of us, has spent their time munching around trying to earn a living.
This is a robot dinosaur, isn't it? I'm suspicious of this because it's robotic and it's designed by Japanese people. We're talking Godzilla, aren't we? There's going to be all these badly dubbed scientists hanging around in the museum, and school children will come in and this thing will rear up and rockets will fire out of its chest, and then Ghidra will swoop down and children will learn that the dinosaurs all lived on Monster Island. You haven't watched these films, have you? They don't have telly in Loughborough. A man comes on a horse once a month from Leicester and shows them magic lanterns.
The new animatronic Tyrannosaurus Rex, complete with authentic swampy odours, has been installed at the Natural History Museum. Rebecca, who's put their finger on the secret of our ancestors' success?
Becky's looking at me in a pleading way.
This is the discovery that we're much older than we thought we are.
No.
What? No.
Well, how, How can it be a news story that you think you're older than you were?
We man, Simon, think big. Think generations, think millennia. These are the people they found in Africa, the remains of people, bones, and they're 6 million years old. Is that right?
No.
Go on, say it again, John. Go on, have another go.
No. It's Professor Leslie Neuwirner of New Mexico says that Neanderthal man lost out to his ancestors, to our ancestors, because of his clumsy hands. They had very clumsy hands, and so they were incapable of doing things, such as playing cricket for England.
Good Lord. Mm,
I still think that millennium story was, you know... I think the 6 million-old story...
Well, you know, I'll give you 1 point for answering a completely different question.
Don't you want...
So is that true, that Neanderthals became extinct because they were cack-handed and they just weren't nimble and
Well,
adroit?
I don't know. It's a survey, isn't it?
Sounds
just they surveyed Neanderthal people and discovered they were cack-handed.
They gave them some buttons to sew on or something.
Wasn't in the research. Left-handed magazine, was it?
They asked them to play a whiter shade of pale on a Hammond organ or something, and they weren't very good. I think you're making this up.
I think we'd better crack on.
All right, let's crack on.
Jeremy, where did one anti-Hunt protester make an unexpected visit?
Just the fox in the House of Lords.
It is.
Ah. God, somebody's there was a house... In the House of Lords, there was a fox, and he got in there. And of course, this was amazing for the peers of the realm, and their just inbreeding kicked in straight away. And they all went... Sorry, sprouts for lunch. And they all went mad. But they didn't have any horses or beagles, so they cornered it in the bar and beat it to death with billiard cues, which is more humane than shooting, and the foxes enjoy it. And of course, these people, they've all got country estates, you know, they live in the countryside, the lords, and let's face it, you never see a fox in the countryside. They're all in London since the enclosures, driving minicabs and stuff like that. You know, quite polite and friendly. You know, we in the big cities live alongside and coexist peacefully with foxes. Bit of a problem if you've got guinea pigs. But frankly, guinea pigs are horrible. They're just big, fat things. And I have to mind my neighbour's guinea pigs when she's away. And they make this horrible noise. And she says, no, you're holding it wrong. You have to put your hand under its bottom. I think, oh, yeah, right. Anyway, that's just peripheral. Point being... They cornered this poor old fox there in the House of Lords. And so Labour's given it a peerage. And it's now Lord Reynard, and it'll be Minister for Chicken Welfare or something.
But anyway, finally along came the RSPCA, and they took the fox out, and apparently they dumped in the road where it was run over.
Is that true?
No, I made that bit up, but I like that.
Oh, we'll all be watching ITN tomorrow night then, won't we? For your pearls of wisdom. And tonight a giant zeppelin has crashed into number 10. Not. Why do you have to stand outside Downing Street? All these poor Egypts are on the telly. They make them stand outside Downing Street and they say, so, John, what do you think is going on in there? And he hasn't got a clue. How does he know? They're watching telly.
It's to show off my nice coat. Have you seen my
nice coat? But why don't they let you in the studio? Have you got an odour problem?
You can't wear a coat that fancy inside without people asking questions. You've got to wear it outside where people say, oh, you must be cold, and it's quite sensible to get a coat as good as that.
This is your wife's story anyway, isn't it? No, darling, you can't come in, I'm afraid. That coat is too nice.
No, I do like my coat, let's admit it.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. John.
This is from the Derby Abbey Community News. We apologise for the error in the latest edition in which we stated that Mr. Fred Nicomb is a defective in the police force. This was a typographical error. We meant, of course, that Mr. Nicomb is a detective in the police farce.
Maureen.
This is from the Swazi Times, and it's sent by Chris Thatcher. For several months, our nurses have been baffled to find a dead patient in the same bed every Friday morning, a spokeswoman for the McGubbini government hospital and reporters said. There was no apparent cause for any of the deaths, and extensive checks on the air conditioning system and a search for possible bacterial infection failed to reveal any clues. However, further inquiries have now revealed the cause of these deaths. It seems that every Friday morning, a cleaner would enter the ward, remove the plug that powered the patient's life support system, plug her floor polisher into the vacant socket, and then go about her business. When she'd finished her chores, she would plug the life support machine back in and leave, unaware that the patient was now dead. She could not, after all, hear the screams and eventual death rattle over the whirring of her polisher. But by the way, the headline of the newspaper story was, "Cleaner polishes off patients."
Rebecca.
This is from the Guardian Diary, and it was sent in by a Mr. Granite. Reader Tony Wybrow writes to tell us that his brother was among the lucky spectators at Chatham Town's 4-0 Kent League victory over Hythe United a few weeks ago. When the Chats were awarded a free kick, their captain, Phil Miles, nevertheless felt the need to give the referee the benefit of his opinion, prompting a woman among the Chatham fans to shout at Miles to get on with it. He yelled back, "Why don't you just watch the f***ing game?" and was promptly shown the red card. Having showered and changed, Miles sought out the woman to apologise. "Sorry, Mum," he said.
Jeremy.
This was emailed to me by my friend Hélène Mulholland, who's a journalist, and it comes from the Washington Post, and it's a contest where readers were asked to change one letter of a word and come up with a new definition. One is foreploy, any misrepresentation about yourself for the purpose of obtaining sex. Osteopornosis, a degenerate disease. And ignoranus, a person who is both stupid and an arsehole.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores throughout most of the game. Jeremy and Rebecca were in the lead, but John and Maureen have caught up and everyone has tied on 16 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from the Yorkshire Post sent in by Philip Parr.
Valshaw might well have made the breakthrough even sooner, but for a serious groin and abdomen injury which required surgery last May and kept him out of England's summer tour of South Africa. I was gutted to miss that tour. said Valshaw.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the newsgroup were Jeremy Hardy, John Sargent, Rebecca Frank and Maureen Lipman. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Debbie Barham, Tom Jameson and George Collins. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.